He has an interaction with a demon-possessed man. He scorns the people as being a wicked and adulterous generation for asking for a sign. And he talks about the power of evil and impure spirits. So you might say Jesus was in a mood, right? So that same day, Jesus went out of the house and sat beside the sea. Such great crowds gathered around him that he got into a boat and sat there while the whole crowd stood on the beach. And he told them many things in parables, saying, listen, a sower went out to sow. And as he sowed, some seeds fell on the path and the birds came and ate them up. Other seeds fell on the rocky ground where they did not have much soil, and they sprang up quickly since they had no depth of soil. But when the sun rose, they were scorched. And since they had no root, they withered away. Other seeds fell among the thorns, and the thorns grew up and choked them. Other seeds still fell on good soil and brought forth grain, some 100-fold, some 60, some 30. Let anyone with ears listen. And then the second part of this, the 18 to 23, is subtitled The Parable of the Sower Explained. Hear then the parable of the sower. When anyone hears the word of the kingdom and does not understand it, the evil one comes and snatches away what is sown in the heart. This is what was sown on the path. As for what was sown on the rocky ground, this is the one who hears the word and immediately receives it with joy. Yet such a person has no root, but endures only for a while. And when trouble or persecution arises on account of the word, that person immediately falls away. As for what was sown among the thorns, this is one who hears the word, but the cares of the world and the lure of wealth choke the word, and it yields nothing. But as for what was sown on good soil, this is the one who hears the word and understands it, who indeed bears fruit and yields. In one case, 100-fold, in another, 60, and in another, 30. Thus endeth the reading. And I invite you to pray with me. May the words of my mouth and the meditations of our hearts be acceptable in thy sight, O God, our rock and our redeemer. Amen. Before the slide goes away, you can see that this is called The Comfort of Hard Truths. It's called that because I said it should be called that, not for any other reason. It's not a magic name. So, I invite you to ponder these words. I have always loved the parable of the sower. There's a coziness to it, almost probably due to familiarity. I sang it in youth choir. Anybody who thinks that music doesn't have lasting effects should know that I'm still singing songs that I sang when I was 11. I remember that the emphasis of the song was all about the miraculous abundance. It went, the chorus was, some seed fell on the rocky ground, some seed fell on the road, but some of that seed yielded 100-fold. I remember it clear as day. It can be applied, this parable, to almost any situation, and we can feel good because we do that thing that I've preached about before, where we try to figure out which part of the parable is about us. Are we the sower? Are we the seed? What's the condition of our soil? But of course, as I've said, it is generally a mistake to read parables that way. They are not about us, or at least not only about us, or only about us in comforting ways. So join me, won't you, in trying to think about it a little bit differently this morning. I live on a street where there are a number of really committed gardeners. I know some of you are committed gardeners as well. My next door neighbor, Amelia, has an evolving vision of her garden and gets really excited when it's her day off and she can rise early and spend the whole day working the soil, regardless of how hot it is. Like, she likes the hot days. She's currently transitioning a tulip bed where last year she planted actually 450 tulips around her whole yard, or 2 years ago maybe. So she's transforming that tulip bed, one of them, to a garden that she says it'll be all purples and yellows. Like, she has a vision, which is something I've never had about a garden in my life. My mother-in-law, who lives on the other side of our house, has a beautiful sculptural trellis and an artistic teepee of tree branches that various climbing plants adorn. It's really quite beautiful. And a fellow down the street who bought a home to fix up has turned over the entire lawn, then mulched it, and now is treating it with, well, I don't know what he's treating it with. He's treating it with something. But the entire lawn is being prepped to be excellent soil for next summer's garden. It's a heck of a lot of work. And I get to appreciate it all because I am at best a half-hearted gardener. I do, though, know enough about gardening to know that the really good gardeners sometimes spend years treating their soil before they even plant. My strategy has been more oriented towards plopping something in a place that looks like it might meet the sun requirements and is almost as deep or as spread out as far as the tag from Walker Farm recommends, almost, and trying to remember to water well through the dry spells. So to my surprise, my strategy doesn't work that well. Just doesn't. But even good gardeners will tell you that sometimes even after lots of hard and creative and even scientifically informed work, you know, treating it just right, the soil just doesn't seem to have what it takes to produce something worthy of all that time. And if you're a committed gardener, that must be incredibly frustrating, or perhaps challenging in the sense of inspiring, you know, still more effort in an attempt not to be bested by a plot of land. As a pathetic gardener, I pretty much don't feel like I have a right to be frustrated given my lack of effort. So for me, it's not frustrating because I haven't put in enough time. But back to the parable. It is, of course, the parable of the sower, not of the gardener. And a sower, on the screen that Charlotte showed with the Van Gogh picture, that's how I picture a sower in mind. Someone who scatters seeds, not necessarily someone who spends time on hands and knees. You know, hands in the soil. Yeah, the image of the sower that artists have rendered are often a person, a man usually, with seeds in what looks maybe like a messenger bag, like we would call it today, walking along and just casually or maybe forcefully throwing seeds onto the ground. So it's no wonder really that in such a haphazard seeming process, some seeds would fall in better places than others, right? This is not someone who is measuring out, just pitching it. As I said, this is such a familiar parable and it's pretty darn comforting and can be seen through so many comfortable interpretive lenses. You've probably heard dozens of sermons about this, all of which have been, you know, maybe hopeful or maybe lovely. But the lectionary skips verses 10 through 17. Did you notice? Maybe not. Maybe you didn't notice because what we've heard today is very likely the part that has been read every time you've ever heard it at church. First the parable and then the parable explained. But there's that gap in between. And you always want to notice when there's a gap in between because somebody chose not to include something, right? I think of the part that we skipped as being like an area on old maps where at the edge of the known world, the map maker wrote these ominous words, "Here there be dragons." Always want to look at what's missing. Watch out. So let's give a listen to verses 10 to 17, the in-between part. My Bible subtitled it, "The Purpose of Parables." Then the disciples came and asked Jesus, "Why do you speak to them in parables?" He answered, "To you it has been given to know the secrets of the kingdom of heaven, but to them it has not been given. For to those who have, more will be given, and they will have in abundance. But from those who have nothing, even what they have will be taken away. The reason I speak to them in parables is that seeing they do not perceive, and hearing they do not listen, nor do they understand." That's a quote. "With them indeed is fulfilled the prophecy of Isaiah that says, 'You will indeed listen, but never understand. You will indeed look, but never perceive. For this people's heart has grown dull, and their eyes are hard of hearing." Their ears are hard of hearing. That was my mistake, not Jesus's. "And they have shut their eyes, so that they might not look with their eyes and listen with their ears and understand with their heart and turn, and I would heal them. But blessed are your eyes, for they see, and your ears, for they hear. Truly I tell you, many prophets and righteous people long to see what you see, but did not see it, and to hear what you hear, but did not hear it." That's the part that we skipped. And I say, phew, close scrape. We almost had to deal with something hard. That is what I would say, another passage from the Bible that no one ever embroidered and cross-stitched on a pillow, right? Not the kind of thing you want to adorn your home. So Matt Skinner, who is a New Testament professor at Luther Seminary, wrote a wonderful piece on this in his blog, Dear Working Preacher, which, as the name suggests, is something of a weekly professorial note of encouragement to those in the trenches, to the pastors who do the work of preaching from these difficult scriptures. This particular installment was titled At Work in the Fields of the Lord. And though most of us on this Zoom worship are not working preachers, though some of you are trained for that, I would still say that as interpreters of the word, we can benefit from his wisdom. Later, if you want the link, I can share it with you. But I will share a bit of it here. He starts by saying that there is a 12 by 12 section of his garden where nothing ever grows, despite his diligent efforts to improve the soil. And then he broadens his lens a little bit. He says, in these times, it's exhausting to work in even a verdant garden. It's deadening to toil where you see no growth. Everyone is tired in 2020. Everything is harder now. And I would interrupt to say, because he's addressing clergy in specific, here he references the fatigue of learning new ways of doing worship, as well as new ways of doing pastoral care, the ongoing worries for parishioners who are not handling isolation well, the divisiveness in our world around how to deal with pandemic and whether to wear masks or not wear masks and gather or not gather, the ongoing need to preach about racial justice and white supremacy to congregations that either feel that it's inappropriate to talk about or feel that they've already done the work and they're good, thank you very much. It's a struggle, as he said, and everything is harder now. So going back to his words, he says to the preachers among us, and again, I say this for all of us, you're drawn to the struggle. You know how much it matters. That means it does the hardworking preacher no favors when the lectionary skips over Matthew 13, 10 to 17, the verses in which Jesus describes why he speaks to the crowds in parables. He goes on, I suppose the lectionary presumes it is giving you a gift by hiding the verses that raise up the prospect that some soils will never open up. Those verses make us wonder whether God is fair, whether the good news is nonsense, whether we have a basis to hope for the kind of growth and progress that someone told us are characteristic of truly vibrant or successful ministry. It's excruciating. Some soils will never open up. So, end quote. Back to me. I am a person, as I have said before, of hope. Faith too, but specifically, I am a person of hope, by and large, you know, which is something I have no right to be proud of. At least in my case, I think it's more of an inherent orientation of soul than it is a virtue that is my doing. That said, these times have been hard on people like me because we're used to an easy trust that all shall be well, which I still do believe. But it is so disorienting to realize how naive and privileged I've been for, oh, let's just say 49 and a half years, in which, yes, sexism has been an occasionally obvious problem for me, but my whiteness and the way that, as the psalmist puts it, the boundary lines have fallen for me in pleasant places. Well, that way of being has been poor preparation for a time when culturally, the scab has been ripped off the way things have always been, and we're forced to look at what hasn't healed, what isn't right, what must change. And the parable of the sower without the hard bits risks becoming pablum that is soothing to our souls. And soothing is nice. But any of us who think that Jesus told parables to soothe his audience may be stuck in a childish Sunday school mentality of faith. Remember, and this is very important, Jesus wasn't put to death because he was so very soothing. Back to Matt Skinner's words. Without those verses, this ominous parable about seeds and soils, ominous, have you ever thought about it as ominous? Seeds and soils can be made to be about nearly anything. I've seen people, he writes, wrench the parable out of its gospel context to aggrandize the real sowers in our midst. Parenthetically, he says, the parable is not about that person, nor about the virtues of taking risks. I've seen people use it to raise money. Again, parenthetically, the parable is not about venture capital. It is not about stewardship. Some of these gross misinterpretations are easy and enticing places to go, and they make for self-serving interpretations or sentimental sermons. But Matthew, like its primary source, Mark, uses this parable and an adaptation of Isaiah 6 to lead us back into the rough patches, into hard questions about our faith and the preacherly craft. So these are the questions that Matt Skinner raises that he thinks perhaps we also would benefit from thinking on. Why is the good news like secrets that only some people know? In Greek, the word is mysteria. What makes a people's heart thick and unable to understand? What hope is there when people's senses, the things they rely on to navigate their world through the world, their way through the world, fail them when their ears can't hear and their eyes can't see? What responsibility do disciples have if indeed they are among those who truly perceive what is really going on? And how would one know if one is one of those disciples who truly gets it in the first place? End quote. So back to me. My friends, that's you. I ask you this. What if the garden we've been called to tend is located right near a black walnut tree, which any gardener can tell you can be downright toxic to other plants? What if the soil we encounter is all rocky or dry or deeply undernourished? We have all of this fresh and wonderful, hopeful gospel in little seeds of inclusion and accountability and joy and universal love to scatter in the bag we carry, but the ground is not favorable, and we are tired and feeling helpless, feeling hopeless even. Nothing is the way it was, and we're only beginning to acknowledge that even the way it was may not have exactly been the picture of God's kingdom that we would have preferred to believe it was. There's a good chance it never will be the way it was, at least not exactly. And we're tired, and we feel ill-equipped for the task at hand. We would like, some of us, probably most of us, to go back to the good thing we once knew. And we become angry or sad or disillusioned when it's apparent that that is simply not possible. At such a time as this, frankly, theological pablum is not very nourishing. And that's why I titled this reflection, The Comfort of Hard Truths. Sometimes it's helpful to acknowledge the hardness of it. So going back to Matt Skinner for a moment, if those questions asked above are the landscape you've been called to work in, you're going to need good tools. You're going to need the whole story, really the whole book, to get at these kinds of questions if you want them to blossom into truly good news. And you're going to need time. Jesus might have offered this parable and his interpretation to counsel his followers about choosing easier paths. He might have talked about knowing when to cut your losses or when to shake the dust off your sandals. He might have offered a gospel of aphorisms or self-congratulations. He might have, but he doesn't. He doesn't say to stop preaching or to stop sowing either, even recognizing the poor quality of the soil. Instead, he uses the parable to name the forces that are actively working against the word of the kingdom. Evil, persecution, backlash, worry, wealth. I would add in racism, intolerance, small-mindedness, small-heartedness. Do not underestimate any of these killers. They do not yield ground without a fight. They make the work hard. Good thing, he writes, you're up for the struggle. Remember that he hasn't placed you in that spot alone. That's the end of my quoting of Dear Working Preacher. I'm not sure what to do with the unsettling words from Jesus. But I know from watching even the best gardeners that some soils simply resist being nourished. The work is hard, and it seems to me that it's important to admit that. It's okay to be tired. It's tiring work, and it takes time. From Pirkei Avot, which is the Ethics of the Fathers, it's a piece of Jewish wisdom literature known as the Mishnah that's found in the Talmud. And this is actually embroidered on pillows, literally. Do not be daunted by the enormity of the world's grief. Do justly now. Love mercy now. Walk humbly now. You are not obligated to complete the work, but neither are you free to abandon it. You are not obligated to complete the work, but neither are you free to abandon it. And so we work. We work hard to improve the soil of our community, of our world, the soil of our own hearts, which first requires us to acknowledge that there are those sections, even in our own hearts, that are hard and dry and rocky. And we keep tending those gardens anyway. And sometimes there is a miracle of new life and new growth, even when we think it's hopeless. And that, my friends, is the good news. Maybe it's so for you, for me, for all of us. Amen.